Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to Cable News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm joined today by Noreen Shaw, the Deputy Director of Government Affairs Equality Division at the ACLU. She's here to talk with me about the No Bailout for Sanctuary Cities Act, which Congress is expected to consider soon. Welcome to the show, Noreen.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. So President Trump's immigration orders have caused a lot of alarm and fear for our local communities. And there's been some solace for folks out here because Oregon is a sanctuary state and Portland is a sanctuary city. But that could mean becoming the target of this new piece of legislation. What can you tell me about this act?
Yeah, this is a really dangerous bill that we actually call the Defund Our Communities Act, because it would do just that. If enacted, it would cut federal funds to hundreds of communities across the country, freezing funds that are critical for our communities. We're talking about losing the funding that social workers, police officers, teachers, bus drivers, all of them, that they rely on to be able to serve our communities. And we're really concerned that communities are going to be hurt in ways, and we're talking about losing the local bus line, losing Meals on Wheels, just ways that have nothing to do with immigration whatsoever, that we think voters are really concerned about, and Congress shouldn't be handing this kind of power to the Trump administration at this time.
Like you mentioned, there is a wide array of programs that might be implicated. Is the act specific about what those might be, or more broad?
It's broad. It names federal funding for food, shelter, healthcare services, legal services, and transportation, but it leaves the door open to, quote, any funding being cut, and it would apply to any jurisdiction that is labeled a sanctuary jurisdiction. So for Oregon communities, it means the entire state, the state's funding that it gets from the federal government, but it also could mean local municipality funding, either because the local municipality gets matching grants from the state or because maybe the local fire department or law enforcement agency gets grants from the federal government directly, and they would lose that funding if they are not willing to hold people for ICE in their jails.
Looking at this from like a national perspective, how many jurisdictions would be impacted by this act that have a sanctuary status?
Yeah, we don't know how the Trump administration will use this bill, but we're really concerned that they will use it to really the greatest extent that their imagination allows them to. So hundreds and hundreds of communities around the country, including a lot of communities that wouldn't even think of themselves as sanctuary states or sanctuary cities. And that's because of the way that the bill is written. It's really written in a broad way and says that if you as a jurisdiction are not holding people for ICE, no matter what the reason is, you will be considered a sanctuary jurisdiction. I've talked to law enforcement officials in different parts of the country. They've told me, I can't hold people for ICE because I don't have the staff to actually hold all these people in my local jail. Or I'm worried I'll get sued if I hold people for ICE beyond the release date that they'd otherwise be released under. So it's really putting local law enforcement agencies into a terrible bind. It's harming the ability of a lot of different kinds of public servants to do their job, because it's saying we'll punish you by taking away your funding for making a decision about how to use local resources. And we think that's actually something that should be offensive to people, no matter what their political stripe, no matter how they feel about immigrants and mass deportations. It's just, these are local decision-making issues, and it's not right for the federal government, for the Trump administration, to be coming in and trying to dictate terms.
Well, the No Bailout for Sanctuary Cities Act also brings in the Supreme Court case NFIB versus Sebelius, where the court ruled that Congress cannot attach coercive restrictions to funding programs. How might that precedent come into play here?
Well, you know, what we know from the Trump administration so far is that they've been threatening state and local officials, and it's really a campaign of intimidation. And we should see it as part of the threats to our democratic system as a whole, our system of checks and balances and powers between the federal government and the state government, being divided and really independent in many ways. And what's happening here is the Trump administration wants to have an iron grip on all dissent in this country, all elected officials. For them, they need to toe the line. And if elected officials don't toe the line by this administration, they're being threatened with criminal prosecution and they're being threatened with defunding. And so we're at a really dangerous moment for our republic, where we need to make sure that Congress actually stands up for all of our rights, our civil rights, but also stands up for our democratic system of government that divides power, that has checks and balances, that say state and local governments can make decisions about how they use their resources. And if they decide not to use their resources for the federal government's agenda, that's okay, because we have that divided government. We have the ability of state and local governments to choose their own way. That's what was really at stake in the Supreme Court case that you mentioned, and what we're really concerned about as we look to these continued attacks on states.
How does this attempt to target sanctuary cities, sanctuary states, compare to actions taken in the first Trump administration?
Yeah, we saw some of these same attacks during the first Trump administration. And I like to tell people that everything that we are experiencing now, we saw something like it in the first Trump administration, but this is those attacks on steroids. And it seems to me that the Trump administration has been emboldened to really exert all the power that it believes that it has in this political moment. So while the Trump administration put forward claims in court during that first go-around that were rejected by those courts, that, you know, the idea that they could force state and local governments to do their bidding, to carry out deportations, courts said no, state governments have the right to control their own resources. Despite that, we see them coming back with this argument, the same argument that was rejected by courts, with even fuller force, with even more aggressively. We wrote the Department of Justice a couple weeks ago saying these claims that you're making about the law are legally baseless, but we continue to see them making those same claims. And unfortunately, the chilling effect is huge. You know, state and local officials are trying to make decisions about how they use their time and their money, and they're going to be concerned about the potential loss of federal funding that they really desperately need. It puts them into a real tough bind.
That kind of goes into this next question I had. Oregon has the oldest sanctuary state law in the nation, and it was strengthened again in 2021 through the Sanctuary Promise Act. Could a different type of federal legislation, a different strategy perhaps, override those protections?
I think we should feel pretty good about the Oregon laws being respected by people in the state of Oregon, by state and local law enforcement agencies that continue to be beholden to those laws, but only up to the point where we start to see violations. And I know that's actually been a major concern in the state of Oregon, that, you know, some local law enforcement might decide that they're just going to kind of take the law into their own hands and take part in mass deportations. And that's a huge problem. So the law, the state law is valid, but that doesn't mean that we're always going to see compliance by local law enforcement. It's something that state authorities have to guard against. We need to continue to see enforcement of the Oregon Promise Act. And when it comes to the federal government's threats, you know, if the federal government took the state to court over its lack of participation in mass deportations, we'd see a lot of those same arguments that we've been making. And I think we'd see them run the course really successfully, that under the 10th Amendment of our Constitution, the state government does not have to provide its resources. They can't be commandeered by the federal government for a federal program, which is what immigration enforcement is.
As immigration and sanctuary cities have become, again, a target for the Trump administration, do you see that there's a need for myth busting about, you know, what is possible and what's within their power?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the greatest myths about sanctuary cities is this idea that criminals are walking free in them. And that's completely false. Even in a so-called sanctuary state or sanctuary city, state and local law enforcement agencies can use ordinary criminal laws. They can they can investigate and arrest people who are non-citizens in the same way they do citizens. And once a person is arrested and brought into a local jail and fingerprinted, that information goes to the federal government, and it goes to the Department of Homeland Security, which can make a decision about whether to try to pick that person up from local custody and try to deport them. So it's really a matter of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, having made the decision to prioritize picking somebody up from local law enforcement. That happens in sanctuary states, that happens in non-sanctuary states, because it's a matter of a federal program called Secure Communities. What we do see is that ICE has got to make decisions about who it sees as a priority. I mean, they are not going to be able to pick up every single person around the country who's brought in for some kind of traffic violation. And that's where the rub comes in, because we can't ask local law enforcement agencies to pick up the slack when the federal government isn't bringing somebody in for federal charges. It can't be the case that the federal government can kind of transfer this responsibility for immigration enforcement to the localities without actually giving the localities any funding or any support to do that work. I think that's part of the real problem here, is that if you're a local, let's say you're a local prosecutor and you're trying to get people, you have reason to believe that somebody poses a public safety threat, you think that they need to be held in the jail for 2 days, but the local jail doesn't have space because they're holding dozens of people for ICE to come pick them up. For a local prosecutor, that from their perspective, that's really bad for public safety, because they are now having to let somebody go free who they think is a public safety threat because somebody else happens to be an immigrant, and maybe they're on the most basic of charges, not really anything that would raise violence concerns. But unfortunately, the jail has been filled up by those individuals instead of the people who are deemed a public safety threat by local law enforcement.
What would you most want folks at home to know about the No Bailout for Sanctuary Cities Act?
I would want them to know that this bill, which should be called the Defund Our Communities Act, is a danger to their local bus line, to their Meals on Wheels program, to their ability of social workers and teachers and bus drivers to just continue to do their work serving our communities. This is way bigger. Wherever you stand on immigration issues and even on sanctuary policies, you probably agree that we need local government to function. And now is not the time to be cutting funding to our local governments, unrelated funding that goes to support American families all across this country through the provision of local services. We shouldn't be handing more power to the Trump administration to feed programs into the wood chipper. We need a lot of these programs, and we need people to be able to continue to do their jobs. And that's why we need people to oppose this bill and call their member of Congress.
If our listeners are interested in learning more, getting in action, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, they should come to the ACLU website, aclu.org. They can take action through our website. They can be patched in to call their member of Congress. And we really want people to do that, because even though the state of Oregon is considered by many to be a sanctuary state, there are still members of Congress who are considering whether or not they're going to vote for this bill, members of Congress who are from the state. If people are ready to take action, they know that they want to leave a message with their member of Congress or talk to someone at an office about this, they should text SANCTUARY, that's SANCTUARY, to the number 82623. That's SANCTUARY to the number 82623 to get connected to their member of Congress.
Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I want to just say again that this is a really crucial time for our democracy to make sure that our members of Congress stand up for people in their communities and push back on this this grab for power from the Trump administration. So encourage people to take a hard look at this bill, H.R. 32, and reach out to your member of Congress about it.
Well, Noreen, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Noreen Shaw, the Deputy Director of Government Affairs Equality Division at the ACLU. She spoke with me about the No Bailouts for Sanctuary Cities Act, which Congress is expected to consider soon. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.